This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil by remote. Prosecutors are asking a judge to sentence Argentine Vice President Cristina Fernandez to 12 years in prison and bar her from holding public office for life for allegedly leading a criminal conspiracy that irregularly awarded public work contracts to a friend and ally. The prosecutor, Diego Luciani, said in his closing arguments that we are faced with the biggest corruption maneuver that this country has ever known. Fernandez was president of Argentina from 2007 and 2015 before becoming vice president in 2019. The former president has denied charges against her, and the three-year trial, and said that the judges already have the sentence against her written and even signed. The former prime minister, Najib Razak, is seeking to remove Malaysia's top judge from his final appeal in the graft case linked to the massive looting of the 1MDB state fund. Najib would have become Malaysia's first former prime minister to be imprisoned if his appeal of his conviction and 12-year sentence fails. He has maintained he is innocent. Najib's lawyer has said that he will not make any fresh arguments in the case, but the lawyer told the federal court on Tuesday that the defense has applied to rescue Chief Justice Miam Tuan Mout based on new information received on a point of law. It did not elaborate, though. The court adjourned to decide the recusal bid. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Weary of Venezuela's autocratic government and the pittance he earned in the military, Dario Madondo deserted and fled with his family to neighboring Colombia, but life remained hard, money was tight, and expenses mounted, so he set off for the United States, an odyssey that required him to travel by foot through Central American jungles infested with venomous snakes. Now, he and thousands of other asylum seekers from across Latin America and the Caribbean are now caught in the political battle over the U.S. Lawyers for former U.S. President Donald Trump asked a federal judge Monday to halt the FBI's review of documents recovered from his Florida estate earlier in the month until a neutral special master can be appointed to inspect the records. The request was included in the federal lawsuit, the first filing by Trump's legal team in the 2 weeks since the search that takes broad aim at the FBI investigation into the discovery of classified records at Mar-a-Lago and that foreshadows arguments his lawyers are expected to make as the probe proceeds. It comes as the New York Times reported that the government has recovered more than 300 documents marked classified from Mar-a-Lago since Trump left August, including more than 150 retrieved by the National Archives in January, a number that helped trigger the criminal investigation. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert who became a household name and the subject of partisan attacks during the COVID-19 pandemic, announced Monday he will leave the federal government in December after more than five decades. Fauci directs the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, is chief medical advisor to U.S. President Joe Biden, and also leads a lab studying the immune system. While the COVID-19 pandemic introduced him to millions of Americans, he's given straight talk to the nation about numerous outbreaks, including HIV, AIDS, SARS pandemic, flu, Ebola, and the 2001 anthrax attacks. Federal authorities said Monday that they have started a civil rights investigation following the suspension of three Arkansas law enforcement officers after a video posted on social media showed two of them beating a man while a third officer held him to the ground. The officers were responding to a report of a man making threats outside a convenience store Sunday in the small town of Mulberry, about 140 miles northwest of Little Rock, near the border with the state of Oklahoma. Now, Arkansas State Police said that the agency would investigate. Under threat of Russian attacks and a war that stopped all soccer in Ukraine in February, a new league season starts Tuesday in Kyiv with the goal of restoring some sense of normal life. There's more at voanews.com. Via remotes, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. Thank you.
Today is Tuesday, August 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, after brokering a deal to get grain moving again from Ukraine, Turkey says it should keep nurturing its ties with Russia.
Getting more food and fertilizer out of Ukraine and Russia is critical to further calm commodity markets and lower prices for consumers.
New Webb Space Telescope images of Jupiter stun astronomers.
Even seeing galaxies in the background, I mean, that we had never seen that before and had not expected that.
And South Korea and the U.S. kick off their biggest joint military maneuvers in years. We'll have these stories and more next. The United States and South Korea on Monday began their largest joint military exercises in several years. North Korea is expected to respond angrily to those drills. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul, South Korea.
South Korea says the drills will include training for various scenarios, including responding to North Korean attacks on South Korean infrastructure.
오늘날의 전쟁은 과거와는 판이하게 그 양상이 다릅니다.
At a briefing, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol said the drills will also focus on cyber attacks and other evolving threats. North Korea portrays the drills as preparation to invade. It often uses the occasion to demonstrate its own military might and make threats. The U.S.-South Korea drills had been scaled back since 2017 as part of efforts to lure North Korea to the negotiating table and due to the coronavirus pandemic. However, South Korea's new president has vowed to restore the drills to deter North Korea. North Korea has launched over 30 missiles this year, a record high for a single year. The U.S. says the North is also preparing to conduct its seventh nuclear test. Such a test could dramatically raise tensions on the Korean Peninsula. North Korea has not tested a nuclear weapon since 2017. The U.S. and South Korea have indicated they would respond by placing more nuclear-capable assets in the region. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Turkey is touting its recent success in brokering a deal to free up grain trapped in Ukrainian ports as a good reason why it should maintain close ties with Russia. Those relations are deepening further as Russian President Vladimir Putin has invited Turkish leader Recep Tayyip Erdogan to attend a Russia-China Security Alliance meeting next month. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Two more ships departed Ukraine for Greece and Egypt Monday, carrying 30,000 metric tons of grain. Since July's Turkey UN brokered deal with Russia and Ukraine, more than 600,000 metric tons of grain have been exported from Ukrainian ports. On Saturday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, accompanied by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, visited the coordination center that's been set up in Istanbul. Speaking at a press conference, Guterres reaffirmed the importance of the grain deal.
Getting more food and fertilizer out of Ukraine and Russia is critical to further calm commodity markets and lower prices for consumers.
Guterres says Ankara played a pivotal role in securing the grain export deal. With increasing numbers of ships leaving Ukrainian ports, Ankara portrays the agreement as a vindication of its policy of maintaining close ties with Moscow. Political analyst Ilham Özgel of the Duvar news portal.
Erdogan grabbed a role, diplomatic, showing to the West that Turkey can be a useful actor in this region and mitigating the adverse effects of the food crisis globally. So he's playing it domestically and internationally, like he did before in many instances.
In the past month, Erdogan has met with Putin twice, despite Western allies' efforts to ostracize the Russian leader. Ankara also refuses to enforce Western sanctions against Russia. In a move analysts say is likely to sow further discord with Turkey's NATO partners, Putin invited Erdogan to attend September's meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a Chinese Eurasian security organization. Galip Dalai, a Russia-Turkey expert at the London-based Chatham House, says Putin's invitation and regular meetings with Erdogan are part of a broader Russian strategy.
Putin telling to the international community, actually, I'm not as isolated as the West wants or portrays it to be. So the symbolism of these meetings, and including Erdogan's potential joining the Shanghai Cooperation meetings in Uzbekistan, the symbolism is more important than the substance. And I think right now, the Putin's audience, the part of the West that is more skeptical of a heavy-handed policy towards Russia.
Erdogan argues that maintaining close ties with Putin, while at the same time having similar close relations with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, with whom he held talks last week in Ukraine, puts him in a unique position to end the conflict. And as Uzgel says, the brokering of the grain deal underscores that Erdogan could play such a role, but only when the sides are ready to talk.
If Putin decides to end the war, I don't know if Ukrainians will concede to the presence of Russian military there. At that point, Erdogan may play a role. He has a chance. He's a good candidate to bring these two sides together.
Criticisms of Erdogan over his ties to Putin from his Western allies have so far been muted. However, analysts say that silence will likely depend on whether Erdogan's close ties to Putin can continue to deliver tangible results in at least mitigating the worst effects of the Ukrainian war. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Police in Pakistan have filed terrorism charges against former Prime Minister Imran Khan. Associated Press correspondent Mike Gracia has the details.
Hundreds of supporters gathered Monday outside former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan's home after terrorism charges were announced against Khan. The charges were filed following a speech by Khan in Islamabad on Saturday. In the speech, Khan vowed to sue police officers and a female judge while alleging that a close aide had been tortured after being arrested. Police have been prevented from arresting Khan by a protective bail issued by a court in Islamabad that is in effect for 3 days, according to a senior official in Khan's Tehreek-e-Insaf opposition party. Khan could face several years in prison if convicted. I'm Mike Gracia.
The legal team for Raila Odinga say Kenya's veteran opposition leader has filed a challenge to the results of this month's presidential election in the Supreme Court on Monday, the latest twist in a political clash that has gripped East Africa's powerhouse. Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan has this report.
Kenya's veteran opposition Raila Odinga filed a challenge to the results of this month's presidential election in the Supreme Court on Monday. That's according to his legal team and a source at the judiciary. It sharpens a political clash that has gripped East Africa's powerhouse. Last week, the Election Commission declared Deputy President William Ruto had won the election by a slim margin, with Odinga close behind.
In the absence of a
but 4 out of 7 election commissioners disowned the count, saying it wasn't transparent. Last week, Odinga said the results were a travesty, but said he would settle the dispute in court and urged supporters to remain peaceful. This is Odinga's fifth stab at the presidency. He blames several previous losses on rigging. Those disputes triggered violence that claimed more than 100 lives in 2017. And more than 1,200 lives in 2007. In 2017, the Supreme Court overturned the election result and ordered a rerun. But Odinga boycotted it, saying he had no faith in the Election Commission. This time, Odinga is backed by the political establishment, including President Uhuru Kenyatta, who fell out with Ruto after the last election. At stake is control of East Africa's wealthiest and most stable nation, home to regional headquarters for firms like General Electric, Google and Uber. Kenya also provides peacekeepers for neighboring Somalia and frequently hosts peace talks for other nations in the turbulent East Africa region. Petitioners must submit their complaint to the Supreme Court within 7 days of the results being declared. The Constitution requires the nation's highest court to issue its decision within 14 days of the lawsuit being filed.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan reporting. Australian police have seized their largest ever shipment of the deadly illicit drug fentanyl. The US 18 $3.6 billion haul has included 30 kilograms of methamphetamine and was found in industrial equipment sent from Canada in December last year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australian police are describing gang members who tried to smuggle 11 kilograms of opioid fentanyl from Canada as parasites. Fentanyl is used by doctors to treat chronic pain. Australian authorities say its misuse overseas has reached epidemic levels, causing thousands of deaths a year. Authorities announced the sting on Monday, describing the discovery of the drug hidden in machinery at a port in Melbourne as extraordinary. Investigators say the opioid is often mixed with heroin, often resulting in fatal consequences. Acting Australian Federal Police Commander Anthony Hall.
This operation has stopped more than 5 million potentially lethal doses of this drug hitting our streets. Fentanyl is a fast-acting opioid that is highly addictive and acts as the same receptors in the body as, unfortunately, the other drug that we know about, heroin.
The illicit haul was found last December in a lathe used for wood or metalworking. Border Force agents initially noticed the machine's poor quality welding and paintwork. The drugs were discovered inside. Details of the seizure are only now being released because of the complexity and sensitivity of the ongoing investigation. The investigation is continuing. No arrests have been made. Police also seized 30 kilograms of methamphetamine, which is colloquially known as ice in Australia. In June, a report by the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission, a government agency, said that Australia had the highest reported use of methamphetamine, an illicit synthetic stimulant per person in the world. The study stated that the use of fentanyl in Australia fluctuated and remained low compared to other drugs. It noted, however, that abuse of the prescribed painkiller ketamine, which is administered by medical professionals and veterinarians as an anaesthetic, was of growing concern. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA News. Pope Francis has voiced worry over the detention of a bishop in Nicaragua. Associated Press reporter Walter Ratliff has more.
Pope Francis has voiced worry about the situation in Nicaragua, where police detained several Roman Catholic clergy, including a bishop critical of President Daniel Ortega's administration. Calling for open and sincere dialogue, it was Francis's first public comment on the raid of the Matagalpa bishop's residence. Ortega's government arrested dozens of opposition leaders last year, including seven presidential candidates. The detention of the bishop and an unknown number of priests came amid worsening tensions between the church and a government increasingly intolerant of dissent. In March, Nicaragua expelled the papal nuncio, the Vatican's top diplomat in the country. The government has shut 8 Matagalpa province radio stations, 7 of them run by the Catholic Church. I'm Walter Ratliff.
In other news, a doctor says a Palestinian man on a months-long hunger strike and in critical condition in Israel could die at any time. Dr. Lina Qasem Haddad spoke to reporters on Monday after the country's Supreme Court rejected an appeal to release 40-year-old Khalil Awada to protest his so-called administrative detention. That's an Israeli policy under which suspected militants can be held without charge or trial for months or even years. A U.S. court has upheld a tribunal's $8.75 billion award to U.S. oil producer ConocoPhillips over the expropriation of its Venezuelan oil assets. The court order grants a default judgment to the company and the authority to collect on a 2019 award by a World Bank tribunal. It includes interest, which amounts to at least $1 billion owed to Conoco. Wall Street ended sharply lower on Monday amid investor worries about inflation. All 11 S&P 500 indexes fell for most of the session, led lower by technology and communication services. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. The Republican governor of the U.S. Midwestern state of Indiana is in Taiwan following two recent high-profile visits by U.S. politicians that drew anger from China, which considers Taiwan its territory. Associated Press correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Governor Eric Holcomb met today with Taiwan's president.
Because we share so many common values and interests and goals, there are more opportunities ahead of us than I think there ever have been before for us to continue to strengthen and cultivate and nurture this relationship.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan earlier this month, and in response to Pelosi's visit, China's military held several days of exercises that included warplanes flying toward the island and warships sailing across the midline of the Taiwan Strait. I'm Donna Water.
This is Science in a Minute.
Around 66 million years ago, nearly three-quarters of the world's plant and animal species, including the dinosaurs, were destroyed in what is called the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event. Many scientists agree the cause of this disaster was the result of the 10-kilometer-wide Chicxulub asteroid that crashed into what is now Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. A new study published in the journal Science Advances proposes there may have been more than one asteroid that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs. Study authors say they found proof of an 8.5-kilometer-wide asteroid impact crater buried some 300 to 400 meters beneath the Atlantic Ocean, about 400 kilometers from the coast of Guinea in West Africa. The study suggests the crater was created by a 400-meter-wide asteroid that smashed into Earth around the same time as the Chicxulub asteroid impact. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
NASA on Monday released two new images of Jupiter from the James Webb Space Telescope that showcases the planet's features in stunning detail. To understand the importance of the images, I spoke to Imke de Potter, a distinguished professor emerita of the Graduate School of Astronomy at the University of California at Berkeley. Imke and her students are part of the team studying the scientific data. I asked her to describe her first reaction to seeing the new images of Jupiter.
They were, absolutely incredible, I thought, to see all this detail on Jupiter itself and next to the planet. The planet is very, very bright. So it's very hard to see something with such a large difference in brightness as Jupiter's rings. And then even seeing galaxies in the background, that we had never seen that before and had not expected that.
What would you say stood out to you the most about the planet's features?
Well, really just the whole appearance and all these little storms and little features. But really, together with the rings and moons as small as Adrastea, which is only 20 kilometers across. So to see that so easily from this distance is quite something. The other thing that really was quite amazing how it stood out was the aurora. So at the northern and south pole, where you could really see that the aurora were extending up from the limb to a few thousand kilometers or so above the limb.
That was the very brightness that you saw at the top and the bottom of the planet, right?
Yeah, so in some images they are reddish and in others they might be bluish, but yeah.
What kind of technology is the Webb telescope using to capture these kinds of images, kinds that we've never seen before?
The way that the images are taken are quite special. They take them in what they call groups, but so they take an image and then they continue to integrate on the image and every once in a while just write it out. And that is a neat way to actually look at something that is faint and does not move or rotate. In our case with Jupiter, they track Jupiter itself across the sky, so that motion is taken out, but Jupiter meanwhile is rotating. So if you would observe by keeping on integrating over time, all the little features, cloud features and moons, they would all be smeared out. And I must say that one of the citizen scientists, Judy Schmidt, has done an absolutely incredible job in putting these images together as they were in the press release.
And they're using infrared to see these images.
Yeah, so the telescope observes at infrared wavelengths, which is different from visible wavelengths. So we see slightly different things than when we would look at Jupiter with, for example, the Hubble Space Telescope.
That is Imke de Potter. She's a professor emerita of the Graduate School of Astronomy at the University of California at Berkeley, speaking with me earlier on Monday. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, has announced he will retire in December. As AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports, Fauci served more than five decades at the National Institutes of Health.
Dr. Anthony Fauci became a household name during the COVID-19 pandemic and the subject of partisan attacks. As the pandemic deepened, then-President Trump pushed unproven theories and pushed back against Fauci's calls for public caution.
We can't be doing the kinds of things we were doing a few months ago.
People are tired of hearing Fauci and all these idiots.
Saying Fauci's a nice man who was wrong about a lot. Fauci also clashed with GOP lawmakers like Senator Rand Paul.
Dr. Fauci, as you are aware, it is a crime to lie to Congress.
Accusing Fauci of lying about the virus's origins, among other things.
If anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
In a separate exchange with GOP Senator Roger Marshall, who questioned Fauci's financial disclosures.
What a moron.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
To all our VOA listeners, please note that now you can find International Edition back on our general website, voanews.com. There you will find other VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voanews.com, and thanks for listening. This has been VOA's International Edition. On behalf of the entire production crew, thank you so much for listening. Visit our websites for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com and voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than five decades ago, at the height of the Cold War, representatives of 18 nations drafted the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or NPT. In the years that followed, nearly every country in the world joined the NPT. The NPT has made the world safer as nuclear weapons states took steps to reduce their stockpiles. However, the treaty is under increasing strain, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a speech to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference. He noted that the DPRK continues to expand its unlawful nuclear program and continues its ongoing provocations against the region. Iran also remains on a path of nuclear escalation. Although it publicly claims to favor a return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, since March, Iran has been unwilling to accept such a deal. Secretary Blinken affirmed that getting back to the JCPOA remains the best outcome for the United States, for Iran, for the world. Russia's ongoing war of aggression against Ukraine is a brazen violation of international law, but its actions also violate the assurances that it provided to Ukraine in the 1994 Budapest Memorandum. Under the terms of the memorandum, which welcomed Ukraine's accession to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and its commitment to remove all nuclear weapons from its territory, Russia committed to respect Ukraine's independence and territorial integrity. This sends the worst possible message to countries around the world that may think they need to have nuclear weapons to protect their sovereignty. There is no place in our world for nuclear deterrence based on coercion, intimidation, or blackmail, declared Secretary Blinken.
Together with the United Kingdom and France, we've released a set of principles and best practices that should be expected of every responsible NPT nuclear weapon state, among them that every effort has to be made to ensure that nuclear weapons are not used again.
The United States is committed to avoiding costly arms races and facilitating arms control arrangements wherever they are possible. Indeed, President Biden negotiated to extend the New START treaty with Russia until 2026. President Biden also reiterated his readiness to negotiate a framework to replace New START. The fundamental role of U.S. nuclear weapons is to deter nuclear attacks on the United States, its allies, and partners. The United States would only consider the use of such weapons in extreme circumstances to defend its vital interests.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.